Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1275 features two Life Rattle classics from Hien Chu. Hien Chu was born in 1966 in Saigon, now Ho Chi Minh City, one of eight children. His father was a career officer in the defeated South Vietnamese Army. He commanded an infantry platoon and was imprisoned after the fall of the Saigon regime. Hien Chu finished high school in Saigon in 1984, then attempted to escape his country because of the bleak future that awaited him if he stayed. He was caught, arrested, and imprisoned. Later, in May 1988, Hien Chu successfully fled the country in a small boat with 80 other people on board. They were rescued by a French ship after 6 days at sea and taken to Palawan refugee camp in the Philippines. Hien Chu came to Canada in 1991. Then, after 8 months, he returned to the refugee camp he had left to work as an interpreter for the United Nations High Commission for Refugees. Hien Chu worked at Palawan Camp for 14 months before he returned to Canada to study at the University of Toronto. He completed a degree in economics, computer science, and writing, and went on to complete a Master's of Information Studies in 1998. Chu worked in the IT industry for a few years while studying theology at Tyndale Seminary. In 2004, after finishing his Master's of Theological Studies, Hien Chu left his IT job and became a pastor for a Vietnamese church in Mississauga. The two stories you will hear tonight are about his first failed attempt to leave Vietnam in 1988. These stories appear in a recent Life Rattle publication titled Rub Salt. Rub Salt is a collection of gritty, classic stories written by four of our past master writers. Tonight's stories may be difficult for some to listen to. They contain strong language, sexual content, and violence. Listener discretion is advised. You are listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and you will hear Arnie Ackman reading Hien Chu's stories. The first is titled The Prisoners. Let's listen to that one now.
The Prisoners by Hien Chu. 1 o'clock in the morning, March 11th, 1984. The guard opens the heavy iron door and commands, "In." I step into the cell. The guard slams the door and locks it with a huge lock. A clank scratches my numbed nerves. I am now an inmate. I am an inmate of room number 4 of Tree Tron Detention Center of Tree Tron, a small town on the bank of the Tree Tron River, with less than 1,000 people, near the Kampuchea-Vietnam border. I look around. The bulb outside the cell casts a weak light through my door. I strain my eyes. The cell, 3 by 4 meters, has a big window at the back of the room. Outside the room is dark. I cannot see what is out there. But I can see the iron bars as thick as my thumb. The gray cement wall feels rough and thick. There is no bed, no shelf, no faucets. The room is a cement box. 5 men lie on the floor. One man sits up and says, "Fuck, don't they know we have too many already?" Another man sits up and stares. I say nothing. After a long time, a man speaks up. "Lie down where you stand if you want to sleep. They all go back to sleep except one man sitting in a corner. I sit down and look around. They are right. The 3x4 meter cell is too small for six. I lean against the wall, stretch my tired legs, and draw a bruised cigarette out of my t-shirt pocket. I used to not smoke, but I am so tense that I need a cigarette to calm me down. I light the cigarette. I draw a long puff. The bitterness of the smoke stays in my throat. I try to depress the cough. I close my eyes and think of Hui, my companion in another cell. Hui and I had been fools. We were fools to wander that far from our boat. Our boat, 12 people going down the Tri Tron River to Ha Tien, a seaport near the Kampuchea border, would reach Ha Tien that evening. There, a bigger boat waited for us to make a clandestine escape from our country, Vietnam. We stopped at Tri Tron to get some food, water, and fuel. Hui and I went ashore and strolled into the market. When we got back, the boat was gone. I don't know why they left us behind. Maybe they sensed the danger in staying too long and were too scared to look for us. Hui and I were fools. We went to the bus station in town, but the last bus had left 2 hours before we reached the station. We decided to stay at the bus station and wait for the early morning bus. We were fools. We were foolish not to know that police always patrolled bus stations. About 10 in the evening, 2 men in plain clothes came and checked our papers. They became suspicious of 2 students from Saigon spending the night at a bus station in a remote town near the Kampuchea border. They escorted us to the police station and found U.S. dollars in Hui's pocket. They separated us and confined us in different cells. Hui and I had been fools. The man sitting in the corner knocks at the wall 4 times with a short bamboo stick every 3 or 4 minutes. "Hey, where can I pee?" I ask. "There." He points his stick at the corner of the cell across from his. I stand up and walk to the corner. A cement urinal, a square block, stands about 1 meter high with a concave surface around the hole at the center. Through this hole, the urine runs out of the cell. There is no water to flush the urinal. The cell stinks. "Why do you have to do that?" I ask the man as I pee. "What?" he says. "Why do you have to knock on the wall?" "I'm on guard," he says. "What?" "We have to guard ourselves. We have to take turns doing this fucking duty. 1 hour for each person, from 11 till 5 o'clock in the morning." He knocks 4 times against the wall. "Why 4?" I ask him. "Room number 4. Listen," he says. I hear a knock in the distance. Minutes later, I hear 2 knocks at a closer distance, then 3 knocks next to us. Then the man hits the wall with his bamboo stick 4 times. Then the room next to us knocks 5 times. After several minutes, the cycle repeats from room 1. "Why?" I ask the man. "So no one can escape at night. If you see or hear something strange, you have to shout to the superintendent sleeping at the entrance of the prison. If you don't alarm him about anything unusual, oh boy, you will get trouble." "Smart, eh?" He knocks at the wall again. I go back to my place. I worry about Hui. If he is smart enough to tell the policeman that we got lost, then we can get out of this trouble. I move closer to the door. I grip the bars and press my face against the bars. I don't know where they keep Hui. The prison has 2 rows of cells, 3 on each side, separated by an aisle 1.5 meters wide. The room across the aisle has the door installed at the opposite end so we cannot see into it. But as I press my face against the door, I can see the door of the room across the aisle. I look across the narrow aisle to a cell on my right and hope I can see Hui over that door. Instead, I see a woman. She presses her face against the bars and looks at me. Her face surprises me. I back away from the door and lie down. 3 o'clock. Knock, 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 knock. The man knocks me into my sleep. I sleep with my clothes on. My sandal under my head serves as a pillow. Coom, coom, coom. The noise invades my ears. I leap up. My heart thumps. What's that? I ask. They gong us up, a man answers. Hey, your number is 6. Shout it, okay? Before I can understand what is going on, he shouts, Room number 4 reports 1. Another man shouts 2. Another 3. Then 4 and 5. They look at me. I shout 6. Then man number 1 shouts again. Room number 4 has 6. Enough. He turns to me and lowers his voice. I'm Bao, the cell representative. We have to count ourselves every morning to let the superintendent know that everyone is awake. What are those women doing here? I ask him. You see them? He grins, exposing decayed front teeth. They are fucking hookers. Psst, they are coming, a thin, tall guy says. I hear steps. A policeman stops at our door. Silence. The policeman looks around. His eyes stop at me. You, he says. Yes, you. Come to the office. He opens the door. I stand up slowly. I look at my cellmates. They look at me with no expression on their faces, but their eyes tell me they know what will happen. I step out of the cell and walk toward the exit. The policeman follows me. As I pass the female cell, the woman I saw last night stands at her door. I look at her. She looks at me with no expression on her face, but her eyes tell me she knows what will happen. Don't look, walk fast, the policeman yells behind me. I walk fast out of the building. The morning sun warms my skin. I see the police station near the entrance of the camp. The sleeping and dining building for policemen stands to the left side. I look back. The prison, a stout, gray, square building, stands at the back of the camp. Don't look back, walk straight, the guard yells. I draw a deep breath. Fresh, cool air moves into my lungs. Everything shines under the sun. The red tile on the roof of the office, the green windows, the bright yellow walls, the green bushes around the camp, the trees, the blue sky. I hear birds chirping among the trees, and I see a hen with a dozen chicks running after her. I see 2 small puppies playing at the gate. Everything is so neat, so peaceful, so fresh. My heart clenches. The policeman leads me into a small room. Another policeman waits for me. Sit down, he says. I sit as he stands up. He walks around the table and stops in front of me. The name on his uniform says Tam. Where were you going? He asks. I got lost and I... Plash! Tam slaps me with his right hand. The blow knocks me off my chair. My left cheek burns as tears run down it. Hundreds of tiny stars flare in my eyes. Tam kicks me in my side. My chest convulses with pain. I gasp for air. Sit up. Tam yells. The policeman behind me grabs my hair and pulls me into the chair. Do you know Hui? Tam asks. Yes. So you travel together, eh? Tam says. No, I just met him on the bus and plash! Tam hits me again. Tam kicks me again. I gasp for air. My left eye goes blind. The policeman behind me grabs my hair again and pulls me into the chair. Let him in, Tam says. A door opens. I see Hui coming in. His face and his left eye are swollen. Recognize him, Tam asks. I look at Hui. Hui looks at me. We look at each other. We were fools. You are a stupid and stubborn guy, Tam tells me, and I know how to deal with stupid and stubborn guys like you, he smiles dryly. Take him away, Tam points at me, and shackle him in room number 6. My guard leads me out of the office. The sun shines in the blue sky, and the birds sing in the bushes, and the hen plays with her chicks, and 2 young puppies rest peacefully at the gate. But my face hurts, and my ribs hurt, and my left eye has gone blind. I walk back to the prison with the guard behind me. I pass room number 4. Bao stands at his door. He looks at us. His eyes tell me that he knows what happened. I pass the female cell. The woman stands at her door. She looks at me, and her eyes tell me that she knows what happened. The policeman pushes me into room number 6. He tells me to sit down, puts 2 iron curves, their ends bent into rings, around my ankles. He pushes a short bar through the rings and locks it with a screw. He shakes the shackle to check it. He steps out, locks the door, and says, "Enjoy it, huh?" and leaves. I am left alone in room number 6. I do not know what they will do to me. If they have enough evidence to say that I tried to escape from Vietnam, they will send me to a re-education camp for a political trial. I have to live with this shackle for at least several days more. I stand up to test the shackle. I try to walk. The shackle hurts. The bar twists the iron curves around my ankles, and I cannot stand it. I sit down and try to move by dragging my buttocks on the floor. The shackle clanks with each move, and the clank scratches my numbed nerves. I drag myself to the door. The woman stands at her door. "What's your name?" I ask. My bruised lips hurt. "Yen," she answers. "How long have you been here?" I ask. "You ask too much, young man. Don't talk too much here." "Do you have any cigarettes?" "Yes," she says, and throws a cigarette at me. She is not in a good position to throw. The cigarette drops a few inches short of my door. I reach out and stretch my arm to pick it up. "Thank you," I say. She says nothing. I look at her. She looks at me with her sad eyes. I back away from my door, lean against it, and light the cigarette. The smoke calms me down. I close my eyes. I think about what I will say to the policeman.
That was The Prisoners, written by Hien Chu and read by Arnie Ackman. We'll now hear Hien Chu's last story tonight, read by Arnie Ackman. It's titled The Scent of Green Chilies.
The Scent of Green Chilies by Hien Chu. Coom, coom, coom. The gong echoes through the prison. It's 5 o'clock in the morning. I sit up. The men in room number 1 recite 1, 2, 3. They count themselves and report the total to the superintendent. I shout, "Room number 6 reports 1. Enough." I don't know if the superintendent hears us. Everything becomes quiet again. Shackles around my ankles keep me from walking. I drag my buttocks across the floor to the corner of my room where I have a 1-liter can of water. I use the water to wash my face, to rinse my mouth, and to drink. My cell has no water supply. The superintendent gave me that can to store my water. Chow, a prisoner laborer in camp, brings water to me 4 or 5 times a day. I move to the end of the room, stand up, and look out the window. The sky turns pink and bright. Another new day. I have been in this room alone for 4 days. I wait for something I do not know. They have not done anything to me in the last 4 days, nor have they removed the shackles from my feet. Anxiety and worry gnaw at me hour after hour. I cannot walk. I lie on my back. I sit up. I stand by the window and drag myself across the floor, back and forth, between the door and the urinal. I cannot sleep well with the shackles. I have to lie on my back the whole night. Sometimes in my sleep I turn on my side. As I raise my left or right leg to turn on my side, the iron shackles twist my ankles. I hiss in pain, and the pain kills my sleep. I wait for the second inquiry. In the morning I wait for lunch. In the afternoon I wait for dinner. In the evening I wait for morning. 10 o'clock. Time for rice soup. I drag myself to the door and press my face against the bar. Opposite my cell, across a meter and a half aisle, is the women's cell. The doors are set at opposite ends of our rooms, so I cannot see the women face to face. I can only see parts of their faces if they press their faces against their door, and I press my face against my door. Women prisoners go out and work in the camp. They cook, sweep the campground, wash the policemen's clothes, clean the offices. In exchange for their work, women prisoners can bathe when they finish. The men prisoners bathe once a week. Yen, the girl who gave me a cigarette the day I came here, the girl the men told me is in prison because she is a prostitute, appears in the aisle with a big pot that contains the rice soup. I call the soup rice water because it is no soup at all. When people cook rice, they have to skim the extra water from the pot. That thick, cloudy liquid is not good for any meal, so people feed it to the pigs. Here, the guards feed it to us. Yen carries her pot from door to door. I cannot see the faces of the men when they receive their portions. I just see their arms hold out their cans for Yen to pour in a thick, brown liquid. Men whistle and crack body jokes at Yen as she distributes the soup. Hey, babe, miss our cox? Hey, Yen, try to hang on. When we get out of here, you can hang on to this, eh? The men laugh. Yen says nothing. She does her job silently. The men's jokes do not annoy or anger Yen. Yen brings the pot to the women's cell. Some women remain in that cell. I secretly observe Yen. I can't tell how old she is. She has the face of a girl but the body of an aged woman, with dry, unkempt, sticky hair. Yen wears wrinkled black pants and a wrinkled white shirt dotted with small pink flowers. The white of the shirt has turned yellowish and the pink flowers have faded. Yen wears no shoes. I've never seen a prostitute so close. I am a young student, age 21. My world is a world of books, of mathematics, of physics, of history, of literature. My world is a world of romantic love and stories of clean and decent women. A prostitute, to me, lives in a mysterious world, with a mysterious life, with a slim, attractive body, with a sexual smile and sexual gestures, with fancy underwear and wild clothes, with readiness to satisfy men's desires. Here I see a prostitute in frayed, dirty clothes, a prostitute with a floppy body, with no makeup on her face. I see a tired and humiliated woman. I see a fellow human being. Hi, Yen, I say, and hold out my can as Yen puts down her pot at my door. She pours two scoops of brown, thick liquid into my can. Men whistle at her and make jokes. Yen hears them, and she knows I hear them. I feel dirty. I feel embarrassed. Are you from Saigon? Yen asks me calmly. Yes, I answer. Her calmness makes me more comfortable. Are you a student? Yes. What grade are you in? I've finished high school. Wow. She eyes me with admiration. I look down to hide my pride. Then I feel stupid. A high school degree means nothing in Saigon. An education means nothing here in Tre Tron prison. Thank you, I say when she leaves. 12 o'clock. Time for lunch. Chow will distribute the cooked rice. Yin comes back from her work. She stands at her door to wait for the guard. Men call Yin and tease her with their jokes again. I press my face against the bars and observe. Yin looks sad and distant. She looks up and looks at me. I look at her. I want to tell Yin not to pay attention to the men. I want to tell her I also feel embarrassed and humiliated at their jokes. I want to tell her of my respect for her as a human being, but I can't say anything. All words sound like clichés and sound redundant. I look down at the floor. From the corner of my eyes, I see Yin pull something out of her shirt pocket and throw it onto the floor just outside my barred door. I see two chilies, still green, on the cement floor. I reach through the bars, pick them up, and put them into my shirt pocket. Chilies are valuable here. The policemen give us nothing but plain rice. If we want some food, we have to give Chow money, and he will buy our order at the market. Chow has been here for a long time. He is allowed to go to the market. Pickled tofu has been my only food for the last 4 days, so even pepper becomes a luxury spice for us. I know Yin stole these green peppers when she worked out there in the camp. I know she, like me, also needs spices in her meals. I look up to thank her, but Yin has turned her back to me. I hear the guard's steps. I back away from the cell door. I don't want him to see me looking at Yin. I hear him open the door of Yin's cell. I hear him slam the door, lock it, and leave. I drag myself to the door. I press my face against the bars of the door and wait for Yin to put her face to the bars of her door so I can thank her. I wait and wait, but she doesn't show up. Finally, I back away from my door and sit against the wall. I pull out my precious gifts. I hold two small green chilies near my nose. A warm scent fills my nostrils. I turn my head to look at the window. Thick, gray, rough cement frames the blue sky. Cold black bars stand against the bright blue background with soft light and white clouds. I think about Yin. I think of the dirty men who have put their hands on her body. This life has molded Yin into a tool for men's leisure. This life has sucked all her youth, her purity, her dignity. This life has strained her and stamped her as a broken toy. But what is left in her is still beautiful. I have been proud about myself, proud about my education, proud about my virginity and my purity. I have spent years reading books of great people to nurture a great love in me. I have spent years searching for great loves in people of my clean, elegant world. But here I am in prison, shackled like a dog behind bars, waiting for the cruel treatment of decent people. I know how simple and sweet human love is in a despised woman. Here, in the world of criminals and cruelty, I find that great love in two small green chilies from a humiliated prostitute.
That was The Scent of Green Chilies, written by Hien Chu and read by Arnie Ackman. We will be playing more stories from the Rub Salt collection over the next 2 months. You can order your own copy of the book from this website. And note, the stories you heard tonight have different titles in the book. The Prisoners was title was changed to Fools, and The Scent of Green Chilies was shortened to Green Chilies. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1275. Arnie Ackman recorded himself reading Hien Chu's stories. My name is Virginia Ashberry. Life Rattle returns next week with more stories. And Life Rattle is produced from Toronto and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.